Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'll be with my friends, just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain you, but to educate, teach you, put it in context. Call me, 1-800-743-CBC. Tweet me, at Jim Cramer. Now, I never, ever, ever want to root against the stock market because that would be rooting for people to lose money. But on a day like today where the average is cut off to a not-so-hot start, we're bouncing back, Dow finishing up 95 points, S&P advancing 0.71%, and the Nasdaq jumping 1.31%. As much as I like the comebacks I saw in the originally lagging healthcare stocks and profitable tech names, I do cringe at some of the speculative moves that led us higher. Every now and then, we get a reminder that tons of people don't understand what moves the stock over a reasonable time horizon. I say, at least for the investing club, I always say 6 to 9 months is a good period. We saw it today when traders blitzed up the stock of Tesla in the early hours on word that the electric automaker might do a 10-for-1 stock split. Might. The darn thing jumped 8% on the rumor, creating $84 billion in market cap. Now, look, I like it when companies with high dollar amounts do stock splits. You know that. But in the end, I always recall that splits don't create real value. You can already trade, by the way, fractional shares of Tesla. So unless this gain is backed up by something more concrete, I expect it could evaporate into the next downturn. I have to tell you, I candidly feel the same way about the 45% run today in AMC, or the news of it, well, actually, the reverberation of the news of a tiny investment in a speculative gold miner, or the 25% gain in GameStop. Well, nothing, except last week's momentum, after Chairman Ryan Cohen bought a decent chunk of stock in the open market. I'm calling this all rank speculation. Now, why do these moves bother me? Because they're signs of fraud. And fraud is the enemy of the stock market, especially when we are as overbought as we are. More than six on the S&P oscillator I follow, remember, more than five, is beginning to get dangerous. Now, it's not just the meme stocks. We also had a huge run in crypto today. Bitcoin up nearly 7%. These, again, are speculative assets. When you see speculative assets soar, you have to worry about the longevity of the recent recovery, because froth typically comes at the end of a run, not the beginning. And we know we've had a nice run here. Remember, the speculative stocks have been hit the hardest since the Fed announced its battle against inflation last November. The Nasdaq, I'm going to give you some statistics. The Nasdaq plunged more than 22% from peak to trough. The Russell 2000 small cap index plummeted 23%. The heinous Renaissance IPO ETF lost nearly half of its value. And don't even get me started on the DSPAC ETF that contains post-merger SPAC plays. It's down more than 67% from its high. Now, you might think it's unfair to judge them from the peak to trough declines, given that we've recovered from those lows. But real people paid those high prices, and many of them likely got wiped out. Maybe they've left. You need to know the depths of despair that the SPAC names and the recent IPOs dragged people to. There's a reason why we've seen so much money coming out of the stock market, and it's not just because bond yields have soared, giving you much higher rates on certificates of deposits. Don't get me wrong. This meltdown wasn't as bad as the dot-com collapse in 2000, a period I lived through both as a hedge fund manager and a co-founder of a dot-com stock. Back then, there were many newly publicly traded companies with barely any revenues, let alone earnings. This time, we had more profitable IPOs, although there were still plenty with zero earnings. If the new companies were better this time around, and in the aggregate, maybe they were, why did we have such a horrendous experience here? Simple. Because we got a serious bout of inflation on our hands, and that's devastating to new companies that trade on the potential earnings prospects many years down the road versus ones that have it now. Inflation erodes the value of those future earnings. Now, this flood of speculative IPOs and SPACs created an untenable environment once we realized that inflation was here to stay. Remember, it was no longer transitory. Many of them might have been fine if inflation stayed low, but once it became embedded, their stocks were doomed. If you've been less speculative, though, let's say you're stuck with boring, solid, profitable companies, then you wouldn't have been mauled by the bear. And that's why I'm so concerned when I see speculation trying, some people will say already did, make a huge comeback today. What would I rather see? What makes sense here and is inherently not speculative? I don't want you to outthink this market. You know what you do? You need to have some boring, low-priced-earnings multiple stocks, the opposite of the ones that are hurt by inflation. Hey, maybe something like Alphabet or Meta Platforms, the old Facebook. Do you know that both are now sell at historically cheap valuations? You might want a healthcare stock that can thrive if the economy does slow down because of the Fed. My favorite remains Eli Lilly, even all the way up here. We're on the cusp of a global famine if we don't get some weather relief and an end to the Russo-Ukrainian war that's pulverized the breadbasket of Europe. We know this because we heard it from the CEO of AGCO right here. That's the farm equipment maker. Remember, he told us that the Russian invasion could knock out as much as 13% of worldwide calories? Bad news for the malnourished. Very good news, though, for the ag complex. You need a consistent retailer that can keep ahead of inflation because it's got something special going for it. That's why we own Costco for the charitable trust, which you can follow by joining the CNBC Investing Club versus, say, Dave and Buster's, which reported tonight. And it doesn't look like that they could stay ahead. They don't have enough special. Oh, and then most important. And this is a takeaway you must do tomorrow. You need an oil, as fuel costs are also getting a boost from the war. Oil got hammered today because of Chinese lockdowns. Those are temporary, but I'll tell you what's not temporary if there's a cutoff in energy supply from Russia. My favorites are Chevron for a steady dividend, pulled back too, and Devon, also a pullback, which pioneered a new way to reward shareholders. Talked about, by the way, at our investing club, returning a great deal of their cash flow through a variable dividend rather than spending recklessly to drill, baby, drill. A possible Chinese COVID-related slowdowns hurting these stocks? Oh, please. Now, unlike nearly everyone else who comes on television to talk about stocks, I'm actually a big believer in owning a speculative stock, even two if you have 10 stocks. I think it's a great way to stay interested in the stock market, interested in your portfolio. But in my canvas of investors over the last few weeks, wow, I hear way too many people who want to own nothing but speculative stocks. Just a boatload of them. Not unlike what you get if you put your money in Cathie Wood's ARK Innovation ETF, which is speculation all the way down. Before the Fed started cracking down on inflation, we considered these conceptual stocks. They might not make anything now, let alone make money or return capital to shareholders, but they had a vision of the future. Back then, Wall Street was willing to pay up for that vision. That is no longer the case. And I think you'll get burned if you try to push your luck with these spec names more than a day or two. Again, you do have my blessing to own one or two. If you're young, the set two is definite. But I want you to consider what they really are. They're like long shots at the ponies. They're a bet on St. Peter's in the NCAA tournament. It might pan out and pay you a fortune. Otherwise, it will just be a rip-up, as we call it. But if you're going to speculate, you have to be prepared for the possibility that these stocks could go to zero. Never buy something like AMC or GameStop with money you can't afford to lose. The bottom line, when you see new unseasoned merchandise exploding higher, along with names like Tesla surging on the rumor of a stock split, it tells you there might be a little too much excitement, a little too much fall off the entire market. One or two of these ones would be fine, but when you see all the speculative assets roaring in an overbought market, well, maybe you need to take a page from Chris Rock. Brace yourself for some pain. Andy in Florida, Andy.
Yes. Hello, Mr. Kramer. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure, Andy. How can I help?
I'm a longtime member in your investment club and really appreciate the investing education provided.
Oh, and I appreciate your kind words. Thank you.
I did some research on Union Pacific Railroad after I heard about it from you, and I found out they're involved in the use of renewable biodiesel. From there, I looked into a biodiesel company. So my question, considering the recent buy by Chevron is what brought the stock price back close to 52-week high. What do you think of REGI and the future of investing in the future of biodiesel?
Well, they've been bought. Chevron bought them, and it's still one more reason to own Chevron, frankly. I think Chevron is terrific. By the way, I still like Union Pacific, too, because you're a member of the club, but I did sell it too soon. Hey, you know what, though? When you make a profit, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye. Thank you for being a member. Jimmy in Kentucky. Jimmy.
Mr. Kramer.
Hi.
Walmart's moved up into the high 140s today. Good run today. And with inflation and fuel prices so high, I've seen Walmart parking lots full and the buggies loaded down. Are we seeing a move higher?
Look, I've got to tell you, I was quite surprised that Walmart, which my charitable trust owns, was able to benefit so much from pulling out of tobacco in some cities. And they confirmed that to me. But I've got to tell you, I have been a seller scaling out of it only because I can't say that I'm that crazy at this stage of retail because it has been historically a laggard when the Fed's raising rates. Dan in Florida. Dan.
Booyah from warm and sunny Florida, Jim.
Well, booyah back. What's up?
I'm a founding member of the Investing Club, and I really like your morning meetings.
Oh, thank you.
You've made me money, and I appreciate everything you're doing.
Oh, fantastic. This is what makes my day. This is why I come to work, to help people like you. Let's go to work.
So I own the semis that are in your trust, like AMD, NVIDIA, Marvell, Qualcomm. But there's another one that seems a little different, more like an IoT play, that's still down about 12.5% on the year. They're at 16.5 times earnings with a yield of 1.62%. I wanted to get your take on Skyworks and whether you thought I should be a buyer here given the other semis that I'm in.
Okay, this is a great question. Now, Skyworks is part of the lesser developed chips that go into Apple. And I think the stock is too low and too out of whack with some of the others. So I am going to endorse buying it. But chiefly, by the way, because Liam Griffin, who is such a good manager and will get you out of that hole and better than that, too, over the long term. Right, when you see so many speculative assets roaring, you have to expect that there's going to be some pain. And I just want you to be ready. We're going to be selling for the Investing Club. That's why I'm clearing that with you ahead of time. On Mad Money Tonight. How has COVID changed the consumer? I'm talking to one of the top retail minds on the street who's taught me a great deal. Then KB Home is stuck in a tug of war between the bears and the bulls. I'm going to share which side I'm on. And could Abiomed, this one is so good, it's A-B-I-O-M-D, Abiomed, bring some healthy gains to your portfolio? I haven't talked to them in a decade. They seem to be doing many things right. I'm talking to the company's CEO. Stay with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now that the government stimulus programs are all gone, while inflation pushes up the price of daily necessities, the consumer spending pie is shrinking a bit. That means you need to get more selective about the brands you invest in. So we need some intelligence about this. So we're catching up with one of the best retail experts in the business, the legendary Adrian Shapira, who spent 13 years covering retail at Goldman Sachs, a true star, for going into business for herself. She's now a managing director at Eurazeo. That's a French private equity firm where she leads their very exciting North American brands division. We want to talk to Adrian about the broader consumer environment and some of Eurazeo's investments, like Herschel Supply. You've probably seen that, right? The high-end backpack. How about Beekman 1802, which is what I'm showing right now? That's a clean beauty brand. Ms. Shapira, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim. So good to be here.
So I've got to tell you, Adrian, I follow all your brands and was very excited. I know, just want to start at the top with this new one that I have in my hand, which is Beekman, of which I am looking at a beautiful Bridgerton box. People will know about that tie-in with really gorgeous soaps. There it is. So tell us how this became the next in your staple.
This, look,
why,
I wanted
why
to
is
bring
this the one. And by the way, just so you know, you sent me a terrific kind of an advent calendar, Beekman. So I know there's more to it than what we're showing here. But go ahead. Why is it in your stable?
Look, I wanted to bring the goat of CNBC, the goat of skincare. Right. I mean, we look at a lot of different brands. And the fact is the category of skincare has been incredibly resilient because it's been all about self-care during COVID. And I think those habits will stick. What really excites us is that the high lifetime value of the customer, right? People, younger people are really understanding the importance of taking care of their skin. And so that means you start at an early age. So the category was incredibly resilient. We saw a lot of opportunity. Why Beekman? You know, Jim, I'm a student of consumer brands, right, and it's always about both the product and the people. And with Beekman, the founders truly blew us away. They've got an inspirational story and a truly powerful partnership with each other. So we're super excited.
Okay, so when you get a hold of these things, what does Eurazeo add to it? Because, look, this is a great boutique brand, just like Nest. When you first showed me Nest, I had no idea. And now I see Nest in a lot of places, and it's displayed beautifully. Will I be seeing Beekman in a lot of different outlets?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, what we love about Beekman, it's clinically kind. So what does that mean? They've got a hero ingredient product, which has real science behind it. It's all about goat milk, which is great for the microbiome, sensitive skin. But the best ingredient, if you look at any of the products, I feel like I'm like the Vanna White these days of private equity. But if you look at any of their products, the last ingredient is kindness. It's always listed. And the brands might come and go, but kindness will never go out of style. So the products are kind to your neighbor, kind to the planet, kind to yourself. And so we loved that really special combination where the founder, Dr. Brent, is all about the science, and then Josh is all about the sparkle. And so you ask, what does Eurazeo bring? We're all about bringing the scale. And so we really got excited about the foundation that they have. But, you know, a lot of people talk about value-added capital, but I think Eurazeo, we don't just talk about it, we do it. We brought our new chairman of the board, Mark Ray, to chair Beekman's board, and he is the CEO of Beauty Counter and had been the CEO of Shiseido North America. And then Jill Scalamandre, we just announced as our new CEO. She too, you know, a beauty powerhouse. She had been at Shiseido running Bare Minerals. So the two of them are really sort of catapulting this little engine that could to blast off. And so that's really what, you know, Eurazeo brings to the table. We recognize a strong foundation, a strong founder story, something that resonates with the consumer, and then really kind of leverage our network, our connections to bring the talent to execute. And, you know, you mentioned Nest. Very similar. We were attracted to a great founder who had built a great foundation. And so it was a very similar story there, too.
But these are expensive products for the most part, and you also have raw costs that are going up. How is the consumer positioned to be able to buy these great products?
Well, look, I think it's all about, one, they work, right? So again, there's real science here. The goat milk is proven generationally. The reason people use it is it actually works for your microbiome. And so, one, it works. And two, we're sort of, I'd say, early prestige, sort of entry prestige, if you will, where I think much like Nest and Beekman are sort of great American brands that are aspirational but inviting. They're not intimidating. So they don't overwhelm you with science. It's much more about sort of products that work but that are approachable and kind.
All right, one last question. The consumer, strong, weak, worried, when you see your numbers, more concerned about buying certain things or more concerned about going out? Where's the consumer doing?
So far, the consumer is strong. I mean, we've really seen across our portfolios strong performance. I mean, again, we are earlier stage growth equity. So right. I'd say we've been delivering double digit growth, and we're thankfully not necessarily hit by the macro yet because of the size of our businesses. But, you know, look, it's been good. You know, we have gone through sort of, you know, between the stimulus, obviously a lot of crises, now geopolitical risks. So, you know, the fact is the consumer has shrugged off a lot. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Right. Well, I think the consumer, you've got the right products. The consumer's always going to buy kind products. I'm like, they're nice. I love that. Adrian Shapiro, Managing Director of Eurazeo, who has done such a great job. These are terrific brands. I hope you'll take a look at them. I love this Bridgerton package because this is something I'll get from my wife for Mother's Day. She won't even know. She doesn't watch the show.
No, it's pretty like Bridgerton, but it has the personality of Ted Lasso. It's a big hug.
I like that. Everybody's back after the break. Thank you.
Coming on, the Bulls and Bears are uncaged and colliding over the stock of KB Home. Which side will come out on top? Stick with Kramer and find out next.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, the economy's in a classic bad news is a good news situation. We've got the Federal Reserve poised to raise interest rates rapidly in order to tamp down on inflation. Even our usually measured Fed chief, Jay Powell, is talking about 50 basis points, double rate hikes, like they're nothing. Whenever the Fed's tightening like this, Wall Street desperately craves any sign that the economy might be slowing on its own, because that's the only thing that will take more aggressive rate hikes off the table. That's what you get. How do you figure out which is more likely? Okay, there are certain industries that punch above their weight class, as opposed to the love tap Will Smith gave Chris Rock at the Oscars last night. Best example, housing. Not only are homes the number one repository of wealth for regular Americans, I distinguish that from the billionaires who actually have to pay a few bucks extra, but when you buy a new home, what do you do? Well, first you go with all sorts of furniture, right? You add appliances. Hey, maybe you need a new car to get around if you're moving from the city to the suburbs. So if you want to find evidence that the Fed's push to cool down the economy is working, you just have to watch the home builders. Of course, we're in a weird moment for housing because of this pandemic. The home builders have been minting money as Americans migrate to the suburbs and the country, thanks to the rise of remote work. Yes, the hybrid economy. House prices have risen sharply all over the country, especially in the Sun Belt. And the home builders sound extremely confident that this era of strong demand will continue at least through the end of the year, possibly longer. Remember, we also have some great tax breaks in other parts of the country where you might want to move to. Hey, given the insane rise in rents, by the way, a home could still be a bargain. But the home building stocks have all been pulverized ever since the Fed declared war on inflation, because a higher federal funds rate ultimately does translate into higher mortgage rates and therefore lower affordability. Throw in the industry's skyrocketing costs, lumber, metals, appliance, labor, and it's clear these guys could have a big problem. Boy, a lot of things go wrong when inflation spirals, don't they? We got a perfect example last week, a real bull bear case, when KB Home, a very well-run home builder, reported a truly disappointing quarter. But we also saw that many investors still aren't willing to let go of the home builders, and KB itself doesn't seem willing to accept a possibly negative fate. While the results were a big miss, management didn't actually lower its full-year forecast. In fact, they raised some parts of their guidance. It sounded pretty defiant on the conference call. According to KB, average selling prices for homes remained great, and despite rising rates, demand hasn't shown any signs of slowing down yet. In response, though, the bears won. The stock got hammered, 38 down to 33 over the course of last week. But if you believe KB's management and believe the bulls, what an incredible buying opportunity, because the stock now trades at just 3.3 times this year's earnings estimates. Guys, that's a comically low multiple, maybe the lowest in the entire stock market. Personally, I think that's often a sign that the estimates are too high. But let me give you both sides of the story. I want you to make your own judgment on this. First, you need to know that KB Home had already been beaten down going into the quarter, because everyone knows it's in the Fed's crosshairs. The decline in the stock attracted a number of bullish analysts who were enticed by the cheap valuation and the fact that this company had been putting up excellent numbers, particularly in California, including some great earnings when reported just in January. Now, fast forward to last Wednesday, when KB Homes delivered a meaningful top and bottom line shortfall. The culprit? They only delivered 2,868 homes. Wall Street was looking for 3,180. While the average selling price was higher than expected, up 22%, year over year that wasn't enough to make up for the deliveries miss. There were some other positives here, too, though. KB's very strong backlog at its highest level for the first quarter since the housing boom in 2007. Oh, but then people remember the 2007, and they want to just say, whoa, too heavy. More importantly, management reaffirmed their full-year revenue forecast, raised their margin forecast, in large part because they expect to see higher pricing. As CEO Jeffrey Metzger, and he is an old hand, put on the conference call, our biggest challenge today is completing homes, not selling them, as demand continues to be robust. In other words, according to Metzger, KB Homes has a supply chain problem, but demand for housing is still on fire. They're actually borrowing more money to boost land purchases so they can have more inventory, which is not something you'd be doing if you're really worried about demand, correct? And hey, according to the CFO, KB Homes' book value now stands at $35.37, which is what the business would be worth if you simply liquidated everything tomorrow and returned the proceeds to shareholders. You rarely see a home builder trading at a big discount to book value. Right now, the stock's at 33 and change. It does seem to be cheap versus what they own. But now there's only one problem. It's something a couple of analysts pointed out in what I thought was a contentious conference call during the Q&A portion. KB Home got not one, but two questions that boiled down to, hey, if you guys think your stock is so darn cheap, why aren't you buying it back hand over fist for the company? In response, Messler said he'd rather spend that money on building more homes in order to take advantage of the booming housing market, although he left open the possibility of making opportunistic buybacks in the future, but I thought not much chance for that. Honestly, I was impressed by KB's ability to tell a great story, and I understand why some investors would find that ultra-low valuation enticing. How often do you see a high-quality home builder selling at 3 times earnings, for heaven's sake? The problem is this. I've been in the business for more than 40 years, so I can question what they're up to. The home builders are cyclical stocks that rise and fall with the broader economy. Cyclicals get this cheap when Wall Street's worried about the earnings estimates. Maybe what is cheap will turn out to be expensive if sales fall off a cliff. Remember, the Federal Reserve is on track to hit us with a series of rate hikes this year, maybe multiple double rate hikes if inflation doesn't cool down on its own. KB Home may be confident in demand for housing now. But last Thursday, we got mortgage application data for the week ending March 18th. It showed an 8.1% decline versus the previous week. Looking back, mortgage applications have now been down for 6 of the last 7 weeks. Not positive. That's exactly, though, what you'd expect. The 30-year U.S. Treasuries, they've seen the yields rise from 1.7 in early December to north of 2.5 right now. I mean, that's the highest level since mid-2019. This is the most important benchmark for mortgage rates. Hawkish Federal Reserve will only push it higher. While KB Home is a terrific company with exposure to some of the strongest housing markets across the Sun Belt, I think you may be taking your life in your hands as an investor if you try to fight the Fed. Then there's a question of execution. This morning, an outfit called Wolf Research downgraded KB from outperform to peer perform, basically put by the hole. As they put it, closings have come in below at or at the bottom of the guided range the past five quarters. And our confidence in stabilized operations has wavered. Wow. That was pretty challenging words. Here's the bottom line. Right now, the analysts are saying that home buyers are pulling back because of rising interest rates. Makes sense. KB Home saying that the real issue is they can't make enough homes fast enough due to supply chain issues. Both explanations seem plausible, but I'm a simple man. If KB starts buying back its stock aggressively, I'll be right there with them. If they don't, I'm staying on the sidelines. Let's go to Charles in Tennessee. Charles.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
I am doing well, Charles. How about you?
Doing fine. Hey, I had a question for you. My wife, she bought some stocks at Lowe's when she worked there about 12 years ago. Got about 150 shares. It's been going down, down, down here lately. We've lost about 5,000 since December. Yeah. What do you think on that? You think it might go back up, or should I hold on to it?
I want you to hold on to it. I think Marvin Ellison's doing a great job. We are about to go into the beautiful spring selling season, which is very big. It's trading like a housing stock. But remember, they do more than just work for home builders, for heaven's sake. They do renovation. They got great gardening. And it's an improving company. That alone makes it worth owning. All right, the analysts are saying home buyers are pulling back because of interest rates. KB Home is saying it's because they can't make enough houses fast enough. Both explanations make sense. KB Home start buying back stock aggressively. I will be right there with them. If they don't, much more Mad Money ahead. Including my exclusive with Abiomed. Wait, you hear this one. An investment in a medical device maker. Well, it's got a real strong hedge, don't you think, against a Fed-mandated slowdown? You know that congestive heart failure doesn't take a break with a slowdown. I'm going to talk to the CEO. And AMC CEO Adam Aron is ushering a new way of leadership for a public company on the backs of shareholders. And I'm discussing why it's front and center when evaluating a stock like AMC. Very speculative. And all your calls rapid fire tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. If you think we're headed for some kind of Fed-mandated slowdown like I do, then you got to circle the wagons around industries that work just fine, even in a not-so-hot economy, like the medical device makers. Take Abiomed, which makes devices for circulatory support and oxygenation, like their flagship Impella heart pump. Now, here's a stock that's been a huge long-term winner. You know, we spoke to these guys last a decade ago. The stock was in the low 20s. Now it's at 321. That's a 1,350% gain. That's why we do this, right? More recently, the stock has struggled, in part because the pandemic caused so many people to delay non-emergency medical procedures. But I think this could be Abiomed's time to shine. It's a real company with an important product that's in high demand thanks to the prevalence of coronary artery disease. By the way, that is the number one cause of death in the United States. It's got real earnings, too, although the stock isn't exactly cheap at these levels, but none of these are in this cohort. Still, it might be worth paying up for, especially since the most recent quarter was real good. So let's check in with Mike Minogue. He's the chairman and CEO of Abiomed to get a better read on the business and its prospects. Mr. Minogue, after a dozen years, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, how you doing? Thanks for having me back. A lot has changed since I've been with you.
Well, I'd like you to run through some of those changes, including what you guys are calling 2.0, because it's been a long time since 1.0 for our viewers.
Absolutely. So when we met 10 years ago, we had $126 million in sales. Now we're about $1 billion. We had $70 million in cash. Now we have $1 billion in cash with no debt. We had 70 patents. Now we have over 1,300 patents and 1,300 pending. And most important, 10 years ago, we had treated 7,000 patients. Now we're over 220,000 patients. And we're able to take our technology with some of the best physicians and nurses in the field, even during COVID, and produce better outcomes for high-risk PCI, for cardiogenic shock, for heart failure. We also have the benefit of having two FDA emergency use authorizations for right heart failure with pulmonary embolism and shock, as well as cardiogenic shock, whether it's from an AMI or from myocarditis. And we also use it along with a combined technology called ECMO and Impella called ECPella.
Now, one of the things when I'm listening to these, some of these, of course, beyond my ken, but I'm thinking these all sound so serious. Would anyone really not go to the hospital to do this during COVID?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And one of the things we tried to do with the societies is let people know the importance that if you have chest pain or you're in trouble, go to the hospital. A lot of folks were fearful, especially older patients. And what we found is that this made the Impella support or the hemodynamic stability even more important. So they could, they're not elective procedures, they're essential procedures. Right. So high risk PCI. Some are having chest pain that it's called non-STEMI. Others are arriving to the hospital getting CPR. And that's where the Impella pump is put in before the treatment so you can stabilize the patient. That's one of our best practices that's been published and validated in the US, Germany, Italy, and Japan. And I'd like to show you a little bit of the pump itself. Is the pencil, it's smaller than a pencil tip. The pump is actually above my fingers, is the world's smallest heart pump. And so this is a 9 French catheter, but we're also launching a new pump that's now in our pivotal study called the Impella ECP. And it's even smaller, and it's really ideal for a high-risk PCI patient so that you can put the device in through a 9 French hole and remove it through a 9 French hole.
But you have to tell us, like, how does that get into your body?
Sure. So what's unique about Impella, and there's an animation on our website with our corporate presentation, abiomed.com, but the pump is put through a small hole in your leg, and it's pushed up inside and up around the aortic arch to go in your left ventricle. And so prior heart pumps required a sternotomy or sawing open of the sternum,
right,
spreading
right.
the ribs, and then putting holes in the heart. So it's unique because it can be put in minutes through a small hole in your leg. But we also have products now for the heart surgeons that can put in pumps through the axillary artery in the shoulder. And that's our new Impella 5.5 pump that allows for full hemodynamic support. And then those patients can get up and walk around or ride a treadmill getting ready for the next treatment. And we also have a percutaneous heart pump for the right side of the heart as well. So now we can do biventricular support from two small holes in your leg or one in your axillary artery.
So are you ahead of the game in the sense that when I was growing up, obviously, when I was growing up, congestive heart failure was just considered to be, well, then you die. I mean, now it's just a kind of a treatable disease from a lot of things I see. But is the profession, are they up on what you're doing?
Yeah, they are. And it's some great technology and companies out there. So if you're looking at the valve, that's the door to, if you house analogy, the door down is the valve. That's Edwards. It's percutaneous.
Right.
If you go into the basement, the lights work. That's the electricity. If you go into the bathroom, the plumbing works. That's the coronaries and the stents. But if you don't pump the water out of your basement, you'll destroy the foundation of the house. So we are the heart recovery company. We're not only trying to keep patients alive, but enable procedures in the cath lab or surgical suite and also allow the heart to rest and recover. Heart disease is the number one killer. We have a growing epidemic of heart failure because of obesity and type 2 diabetes. That's also the number one right. cause of death for type 2 diabetes. And what we really want to do is enable this older population to have minimally invasive treatment. But we have teenagers with myocarditis. We have young moms with postpartum cardiomyopathy. They want to go home with their own heart. We have moms and dads having heart attacks where you put the device in and stabilize them. And then we have 65-year-olds and above that want to have the option of minimally invasive procedures, something where you can put the Impella in and a skilled interventional cardiologist can place stents so that the patients can go home and 90 days later potentially have an improved heart function. So we're really excited about what we're doing, but we're kind of the next frontier now that the heart pump is where the next revolution is going to happen.
Now, there was an outfit, I hate to even dignify them, but actually I'm not going to because, what the hell. There was a company that said that you do not have meaningful pipeline catalysts, that they're still a ways off. I'm listening to you and I'm saying that just can't be true. You've just described a whole bunch of catalysts to me.
Yeah, so today we got the best outcomes we've ever had. We only dropped one quarter in COVID. We grew the rest. It was just the first quarter. We grew last quarter. It was a record quarter in patients and revenue. Our forecast is for a record quarter this year, which we're on track in our forecast. And again, every quarter for us is growing sequentially now and is a record. It's because we have a lot of penetration to go for existing products, existing exclusive FDA approvals. And we also have the Impella 5.5 pump which is the heart pump for the surgeons to put through the axillary.
Right.
This has been growing over 150% in COVID. There's nothing like it in the world because it completely can unload. It can pump the blood for your heart. It has sensors on it. And what we also do with our technology is we allow the console information to run in the cloud, and we provide unique service to the hospitals. We're bedside right. with our team. We're on the phone, but we're also in the cloud where okay. I can see now 90% of my patients right from my phone.
Wow. Look, I got to tell you.
It's called Impella Connect. And right. that's where we're able to monitor and help our hospitals, even with the labor shortages or COVID restrictions.
Well, I got to tell you, a really different company from when we saw you then. And I still think there's a lot more to run. These are all very exciting, sir. That's Mike Minogue. He's the chairman, president, and CEO of Abiomed. We made a lot of money before ABMD. I think we're going to make a lot of money again. Thank you so much for coming to the show. Thank you for saving as many lives as you do. Holy cow. Thanks. Great stuff.
And
thank
the best
you.
Is yet to come. Thanks
all
for
right.
your time.
Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, a storm is coming, so give us a call. Kramer's got the answers to all your burning questions. The Lightning Round is next. Tomorrow, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street. Live from Post 9 at the NYSE.
I mean, you can't beat it. You want an Apple phone, they give you the phone. Then you run up the subscription. The bill comes out at 3 a.m. so nobody sees it except for me. And sometimes I see it because I'm going to sleep. Sometimes I see it because I just get up. But there it is.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern.
It is time. It's time for the Lightning Round. And then the Lightning Round is over. Are you ready? Ski that down the rail. Okay, let's start with Chris in New York. Chris.
Booyah, Jim. Huge
Booyah,
fan of you and the show. It is an honor and a privilege to be speaking with you. What are your thoughts on Wells Fargo, symbol WFC, and when are we getting Charlie Sharp on the show?
Oh, I would love to have Charlie on. He's the CEO, and this is one of the largest positions in the travel trust. I reiterate our 10:20 morning meeting. Wells Fargo is the bank stock to own. John in New Jersey. John!
Jim, how do you do, sir?
I am doing well. How about you?
Need your advice, brother.
Sure.
ENB, Enbridge.
Oh, I like Enbridge. Wall Street doesn't like it. I like yield and growth. And Al Monaco's going to give it to you. How about Juan in Nevada? Juan.
Is this Jimmy Chill?
You bet it is.
Hey, Jim. Hey, I'm an investing club member. Very Perfect. Happy. I already own AMD and Marvell and your recommendation.
Thank you
very much. And I'm looking for more semiconductor exposure for automotive side. I'm looking at NXP Semiconductor.
I like NXP. They are really the auto semiconductor. I know that I should probably have more auto and less telco, but I like ours too. I think you got a good story there. Michael in Tennessee. Michael.
Hey, Jim. How's it going?
I am doing well. How about you?
Doing pretty well. I've got a stock down 46% year to date. Got a net profit margin of about 46%, and they just announced a 1 million share repurchase plan. What do you think about InMode here?
I like InMode. I like skincare. That's why I like very much. I'm going to give you from my travel trust. We like Bausch Health. It's been a complete dog. It's just not working, but that's because they haven't been able to do their IPO yet. $22. Bye. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Coming up, has the dynamic AMC CEO once again spun gold for the silver screen stock? Kramer considers a deal to which the critics are giving two thumbs up. Next.
Booyah!
Booyah, Jimmy!
Booyah!
Mr. Kramer, thank you for taking my call and everything you do for us.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
After reading every book you've written five times over, I've been able to leave a traditional career at age 37 to make a full-time successful career managing my own portfolio.
I've been watching your show for about 10 years.
Thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you so much for everything you do for us, Home Gamers.
Just want to thank you for sharing your market knowledge. You have unquestionably impacted my approach as a serious investor.
right, this is a great one. Nothing infuriates professional money managers like seeing AMC stock jump 45% today after CEO Adam Aaron Kimmel walked on the street, our show, and explained his company's investment in a profitless gold and silver miner. They're aghast at how much the market's loves a seemingly nonsensical move. I mean, what the heck does a movie theater chain need with a gold mine? At the same time, smart, sensible deals can't get any love. HP Inc. fell nearly 3% today after they bought Poly, a computer peripherals company that fits right in with their product line. This morning, CEO Enrique Lores told us a very good story on Squawk of the Street about how Poly will solidify HP's efforts to own the remote work business, hybrid. What a crazy juxtaposition, though, in one single hour. I get why this drives the professionals nuts. Gold mining and movie going, they aren't exactly two great tastes that taste great together. Even more aggravating, AMC already ran up more than 25% last week on the same news. Their capital injection has caused a massive rally in Hycroft, a penny stock gold miner, and so it's got silver too, that they invested in, prompting Adam Aaron to crow that he's already made a lot of money for shareholders. It was a good appearance, but a 45% improvement on old news? That's a showman for you. As for Lores at HP, he says they need Poly badly, even though it's only growing at about a 15% clip, because people need a full suite of products to work from home. I question why he just doesn't make his own accessories, given that HP is a terrific manufacturer. Although in my experience, I don't really find the sound quality of his computers that great. Hey, maybe Poly will help. Lores says that they're the best at what they do, and honestly, so it's a pretty reasonable move. And Enrique has made a ton of money for shareholders. But let's get serious here. There are many types of mergers, and I have to be impressed by the way Adam Aaron has been able to make so much money for AMC shareholders via what can only be called financial alchemy. The reason why this totally speculative investment can work is thanks to a cohort of home gamers who call themselves apes. You might be one of them. They love Adam Aaron because he's moved AMC stock higher through sheer grit and determination. That's given the apes a chance to cash in. Of course, I have no idea how many will actually take that chance. They seem addicted to letting it ride. They're not that prudent. Either way, the stock can keep rallying as long as Adam can cultivate the cult. Get them to buy into anything he does. He's probably got some more up his sleeve. He's rebuilt this almost dead company on the backs of the apes, and it seems like they'll support whatever he wants. And it's working. Now you might ask, is it right that it works? Does it make sense that AMC has more than doubled, adding more than $8 billion in market capitalization since its $27.9 million investment in Hycroft gold and silver mine? I see. You can't argue with the results. Adam has embraced his shareholder base to the point where they just worship him. Hey, by the way, we've seen the same thing with Ryan Cohen, the chairman of GameStop. Last week, we learned that he bought 100,000 shares, and now this stock has also doubled in just 1 week. The professionals might say this is all some crazy cult of personality, maybe even a dangerous one. I say you should try to understand why the cult exists in the first place. I think Adam Aaron is being very smart here. The movie theater business has been soft because of COVID. But when other chains went under, he's been able to raise a lot of money thanks to the apes and be king of the category now that the movies are back. So why not use some of that cash to make some speculative investments with big potential payoffs? Frankly, I hope Ryan Cohen at GameStop takes a page from the same playbook. In the end, these guys are catering to their shareholder base, which is dominated by Reddit posters who love speculation. These are individuals. I think most traditional CEOs cater way too much to big institutions and not enough to the individual investor. If Adam Aaron were traditional CEO, AMC would have gone under. But by dint of his personality, he changed his shareholder base, and that allowed AMC to live to play again while making a ton of money for people. By the way, including himself. Remember what I said at the top of the show, I champion speculation? Well, you want to be in one of these. Just promise me, please, not to make it your whole portfolio. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. The news with Shepard Smith starts now.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.